8.
Any last words?
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everybody, to Chuck and Lou on this Sunday evening, obviously. I'm Chuck, and we got Lou over here, and tonight we have a guest. We have Coach Kevin Walsh from Vianney. Coach, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Man, this is just, it's awesome to do this, because now we're actually moving across the river here to getting some South Side people into the mix here. So it's nice to have Coach with us, and like I just told Coach, he's just going to kind of chime in with us, and then just like normal, we're going to ask you some questions at the end to spread some basketball knowledge around, and a great coach. You know, I've kind of witnessed, you know, what he's done, and he just does it the right way. He's a good dude. So, good to have you.
Well, I appreciate being here.
Coach, it's your turn, and we are going to talk to you about a lot of things, but the first thing I want you to do is give us your background from the time you were maybe 1 year old. You know, what's your life like? You tell us, who is Kevin Walsh?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me here. I appreciate it. If you're ever in South County around Vianney High School on a Tuesday, Thursday morning when it's still dark out, you see a kind of fat, out of shape old guy running the track. I'm listening to you guys as I'm putting in
That's awesome.
3 or 4 miles.
So. I saw that some of your hobbies are running.
Yeah.
Have you run in any marathons? Or?
I've done 2 marathons and probably 10 or 12 half marathons.
Really? Yeah. I've done 2 half marathons.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever probably get to run a full marathon, but I'm a runner too.
Yeah.
And I need to get back into it. But I'm the same way. When I run, I can, you know, just tune everything out.
Right.
All right. So give us some more.
So I'm a South County guy. Okay. I grew up in Afton. Went to Vianney.
Where'd you go to grade school?
I went to Seven Holy Founders.
Oh.
Catholic grade school down there in Afton. I'm the youngest of 3. I got 2 older sisters.
Okay. Just like me.
Okay. Yeah. So I went to Vianney. Right. Played football and basketball while I was there. Really loved basketball, and I played football, but I got basketball. Like, I understood what we were trying to do. Football, I was like, okay, on this, I'd do that. I wasn't a very good football player, but we weren't a very good football program, different than now.
Right.
So I got to play my fair share, and kind of knew in high school I wanted to be a teacher and a coach, so I went to Fompon, majored in history and education, and played basketball there for Lee McKinney. I mentioned him earlier, and after I graduated, I got offered 2 jobs, actually, to be a freshman coach and history teacher at DeSmet, or to be a varsity assistant coach and history teacher at Vianney, and Vianney was kind of my place, so I went there, was the assistant there for 5 years, and then took over as the head coach and have been doing that for 19 years, which is kind of scary because I'm the old guy now.
Well, and it doesn't take long to be the old guy. Like, even now, I've been there. I'm like, how many years you coach? I'm like, I don't know. You know, and you kind of get there. But so you have been in education for 24 years?
Yeah.
24 years. So where's this going to take you, I think?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I love what I do. I kind of joke that I got my dream job when I was as a teacher when I was 22 and got my dream job as a coach when I was 26. So
yeah, that's kind of
the same
boat.
I wanted to be, you know.
You know, that's with me, it was the same way. You know, you get what you want, and it's hard to leave.
Right.
And you just always have such good kids and families.
I do. I'm very fortunate, you know, great kids that do anything that we ask them, play so hard, and supportive families, and it just works for us and works for me, and I love it there.
That's great. What makes Vianney stand out from the rest of the schools, maybe in your conference or the other private schools? Like, what's your guys' coach here, for you guys who didn't know, was the principal, or interim principal for a year?
2 years ago as the interim principal.
So what's your mission at Vianney? Because to me, when I look at the private schools around, they all kind of have their own way.
Right.
But Vianney has kind of, you've kind of stuck to your way through good and bad. You know, you see some changes in the other private schools, and Vianney's always kind of done things the same way. So what is the mission at Vianney?
So Vianney is a Marianist school. The Brothers of Mary founded the school in 1960, and one of their big things they talk a lot about is family spirit. And I was taught by a lot of Marianist priests and brothers, and the thing that always struck me about them was their humility.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is kind of who we are. We're not going to bang our chests, and we're not going to be any different than who we are. And our administration has been true to that as long as I've been there, and been very fortunate to work for some really great people.
That's awesome. And you can definitely see that from an outside. You know, I don't know anything about Vianney being a St. Charles guy, but I know basketball part of it. you know. But let's go ahead and talk just a little bit. I know Lou's got some questions here for you. Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of talk about basketball and life in general. But, sure. But Lou, you want to go ahead and,
yes, I will.
And start?
All right. Best players you've coached at Vianney. It's got to be a starting five.
Starting five,
the best players you've coached at Vianney.
All right. Well, my point guard will be Paul Paradowski.
Paulie.
He was a 1,000-point scorer, went down and played at SEMO. He's actually the only Division I player I've ever coached. He would pass the ball to Tony Cochran. Tony was a two guard for us, played at Harding in Arkansas and then Central Missouri. He made 299 career three-pointers.
Holy cow.
Yeah. He's our all-time leading scorer.
Splash.
Yeah, he could stroke it. Brad Woodson, who went and played at Central Missouri, was on our Final Four team, would probably be our three-man. Brandon Beal was an outstanding player for us, older brother of Brad Beal. When I knew Brad as a little guy, he was Brandon's little brother. Now Brandon's become Brad's brother. And then Dave Stewart, who now is the baseball coach at DeSmet, was a great player for us. Actually graduated as our all-time leading scorer. He graduated in 2007, was on a couple quarterfinal teams. So that'd be my starting five. Nice. I'd take those guys.
I'd take those guys, too. I remember watching Stewart, and he was a good pitcher.
He was a good pitcher, good hitter.
I remember watching him.
Yeah.
He was a big, good-looking kid, big kid.
Yeah, I mean, he won a state championship in volleyball as a freshman.
Yes.
And played in, like, the junior Olympic program and then played 4 years as a varsity starter in basketball, was our all-time leading scorer, and went to Nebraska to play baseball.
Gotcha.
So, pretty good athlete.
Gotcha.
Pretty good athlete.
What's up, Lou? We got some more?
Best players you've coached against, five best.
Whew. So, I've listened to your guys' podcast, so I kind of anticipated this coming. So, here, all five of mine are guys that I coached against in the MCC, and all five of them have been in the NBA. So
this is an amazing list. You showed me this. It's great.
So Brad Beal from Chaminade, he was a pretty good player. Jason Tatum.
Who's he?
He's also a pretty good player.
How would that be going up against Jason Tatum?
It was really hard, and it's funny. You know, our guy's going, we got a guy that's at Maryville right now, and Zach Coletta. Zach was a great player. And like, I remember losing my mind that he couldn't keep Tatum off the boards.
Oh,
We got a guy named Danny Baker who's at Illinois Wesleyan, a Division III school, good Division III school. Mm-hmm. And I'd be so mad he couldn't stop him off the dribble. And now I'm like, no one in the NBA can stop this guy. And I'm mad at these kids that were killing themselves for him.
You're mad at the 16-year-old kid who can't guard Tatum.
Right.
Each time you play there, each time you play Tatum, big crowds.
Oh, yeah. We would pre-sell tickets. And same at Chaminade. So Beal and Tatum.
Surprised they actually had it at Chaminade.
Yeah. Our games, they did. And then, like, CBC, they would play out at Lindenwood. So Beal and Tatum from Chaminade. You can add David Lee, also an NBA All-Star. Larry Hughes. I was an assistant when Larry played, but I think that still counts. And then I would add Blake Ahern. He played at DeSmet, was a great shooter, and had a couple of cup of coffee with the Spurs and the Heat. Now he's coaching in the G League, and
he's doing great.
A great job.
Yeah.
Doing a great job.
I mean, he went from, you know, coaching at DeSmet to darn near coaching. He's going to be on the
Spurs
bench.
He'll be an NBA coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He's
like 20 games under 500 in a 2-year high school career.
Right.
So that'll tell you it ain't the X's and O's, it's the Jimmys and Joes.
I said that to somebody who was talking about him, and they're like, well, and I'm like, it doesn't, it's high school basketball. It's going to be about the kids you get.
Right.
I mean, yeah,
plus
that's interesting.
School.
You know, you look at his record, like he said, next thing you know, he's, making $100,000 coaching the Spurs.
Right.
Or, you know, they're obviously I call them the minor league basketball, you know, baseball stuff.
Right.
But what a list. I think that is the best list from all the coaches we've had. Yeah, that is the best list.
Well, it's a great list, but it has impacted my career record.
How is it like playing in your conference?
Honestly, it's awesome.
Okay.
It is awesome.
Now, you play every team once?
Twice.
Twice.
We go home and home. So 8 games a year.
Okay.
We play our league. And it's great because it's big crowds. It's obviously high-profile players.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean,
big-time student sections.
Yeah, big student sections. And, you know, in 2012, we go undefeated and win it, and that's pretty awesome. But even last year, you know, we knock off Chaminade, who was number one in the area, and, you know, it's one of 3 wins. I think we were 3-5 in the league, but you knock off those guys.
But that counts like 6.
You walk around and you feel
your
so good. Yeah. So
was that probably your best win you had last year against Chaminade?
Yeah, that definitely was our best win.
That was a really good team.
Yeah, they were very good.
Endless amount of guards.
Right. They play so fast, and we just hung in there and battled and had a lead, and then they cut into it, and it was one of those, like, oh, I've played this game 100 times, and we're going to play them tough, and it's going to get away at the end, and we just made enough plays. And So it, you know, so when you get that, and I know you're a competitor, I mean, you want to play the best,
right?
And you know, it's great. I mean, it's hard and it's challenging, but as a coach, and you like to game plan and figure out, okay, how can we slow these guys? And that's kind of what it's all about.
Yeah. So are you like me to where when we're going to talk about your preparation and your, and what you do to prepare your guys, but I think as a coach, when you prepare as much as you do, you're always going to prepare differently, but there are some games you're going to prepare more for,
sure.
Probably.
Yeah.
Are you the same as me? Is like when I prepare, I always think we're going to win. Like, I think we can win this game. Cause for example, a couple years ago, we're preparing and we're playing Vashon. I think it was a
state quarterfinal.
Yeah. And we're watching it, and I'm four games in, and I'm like, we got them. Four offensive rebounds, first possession. Right. I just looked at my coaches. I go, this is going to be a long night. You know, but so let's get back to the preparation thing.
Is that the
thing.
One where they had a steal right off the bat and for a dunk?
Yeah, that was
goes,
the one.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and that's also another story. I got the guy that got married yesterday, he came to that game, and he's like Pat, he came over to my house after the game, season was over. He was my neighbor. And he's like, yeah, he goes, I was in the bathroom, and some guy was taking a leak, right?
Uh-huh.
And he was on his phone. And he goes, yeah, he goes, you might as well just turn around. This ain't a game, man. You might just turn around and go home. I was like, first off, your buddy's telling you that right when you get home.
That's a good friend.
I'm like,
all right,
thanks, man. So, yeah, we got stomped that one. So when you are preparing for any team, whether it's St. Charles West or whether it's Chaminade or whether it's the School of the Blind, what's your preparation look like? What do you focus on as a coach?
So it's kind of several phases. First thing I try to see everybody live. I mean, as great as huddle is, and I love it. It's terrible for my marriage and my fatherhood, but
it is.
I love it. I always try to get out and see somebody live. I just think seeing people in person, they look so different. Sometimes on video, you get a sense or body language or how teams respond to things. And I'm a big call guy. I like hearing calls because I think I can try to help my guys. So I try to see them once live, try to get three games or so on video, and then I try to break down sets and calls, inbounds, and then personnel, and
gotcha.
Try to have a handle on, you know, if this guy's going right, he's getting to the rim. If he goes left, he's looking to pull up, or big guy's only going to turn over his left shoulder, that type of thing.
Right.
I don't think I'm any different than most guys that
prepare.
I think
prepare, you're about, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Do you ever worry about overload with your guys?
Yes.
I do too.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I get in that, you know, phase of, you know, you spend an hour and a half prepping, you know, a practice where you're going over everything, and you get to a point where you're like, you know, that really impacted like seven of my guys because they play, and now I have, I don't know, you sometimes think, did I just waste an hour and a half? These kids not getting better.
Right.
But you have to because you want them to be prepared. But then again, they're 16 and 17, and you're just, you know, you don't want to overload them because I always, you know, I do the same thing you do. But my thing is, I always go back like the night before or the next morning at school, and I find more things.
Yeah.
Once my prep is given,
the high game, I know that for sure.
I can't because my boys are probably like, dude, you've told us so many things.
Yeah. So like, we don't play till we played in our Coaches versus Cancer. We've been off for a week. We play in the Lindbergh tournament this week. Like, I put Westminster. We play them in the first round. I put them to bed. Like, I will do no more with them.
Right.
I've got everything that I need because I got to try to avoid doing that exact thing. And so then over practice the next couple of days, we'll take some tendencies that they try to do and defend them. And
well, they shoot a lot of threes.
Yes, I am well aware. I am well aware.
They just missed enough against us, and that's the reason why we won.
Kind of what we're hoping for.
Yeah, because I've seen them play a couple times, and they don't miss a whole lot.
No, they don't.
So so you're in the Lindbergh tournament, you said, this
week?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Lou, you got any more? You got some more over there for you?
Yes. What does a Vianney practice look like? If we walk into the gym, we're going to see a Vianney practice. What does it look like?
So typically we start with a bunch of shooting.
A lot of hoops in that gym.
There are a lot of hoops. We got 10 hoops in there. So we always try to do a lot of shooting, a lot of technique and form. Especially this year, we're not very big, so we got to shoot it really well. So we spend probably 20 to 30 to open practice just doing a lot of shooting, technique shooting. Then typically we'll get into some transition work in our transition game for 15, 20 minutes. And then we'll go half court and try to get some runouts to work on transition. And then get into a lot of defensive stuff. Craig Kennedy is my assistant coach, and he is basically our defensive coordinator.
He does a great job.
He's tremendous.
What is his focus with defense, though? Because I feel like you guys are never huge.
Right.
And you're never, but you're always in the right spots, and you give teams fits, and the other teams don't score as much on you guys as other teams. Does he have a certain focus? Or
yeah,
is it...
he, you know, and he's kind of changed me a little bit, because I'm always kind of like, hey, if we're not big, if we're not like, let's just get back and guard 19 feet in. And he's big on, let's get up and have a presence on the ball. Let's try to slow them. Let's not let them come down and just do what they want.
Right.
And then we run some matchup, and we run some man, and try to mix that up. And he's really good. I get a little more amped up, and he's very calm and a good calming influence on our guys. So he's really good.
And I think you do have one of the best staffs around.
Thank you.
Is your staff still the same as it was and has been?
Well, for the last 2 years. So Terry Cochran retired 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it was Terry, myself, and Craig. Prior to that, Rick Kirby was there.
Right.
He was a heck of a coach. I've been very fortunate that these great coaches at public schools retire, and I guess we've built enough of a relationship that they want to come work with us. So we have a young guy right now named Rich Dorhauer, who was our point guard on our 2012 team, who was a really great team, who is great because he's, you know, we had three older guys,
right,
and who
right.
they relate to. And so Rich does great kind of connecting with the kids and keeping them sane when I'm losing my mind.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about who are some of your mentors, you know, not only in life, but with basketball and education.
Sure.
You'd be lying if you ever asked anybody who's a coach or a teacher, who are your mentors, and they look at you and say, oh, not really anybody. I mean,
right.
That's why probably, at least for me, it's why we do it, is because
right.
we kind of idolize those people, but we call those people our mentors. So give us a couple mentors that you've had in your life.
So when I was in high school, my mentor was a gentleman named Charlie Walsh. We weren't related. I played for him for 2 years. I played on a sophomore team for 2 years, and he coached me those 2 years and was my economics teacher. And then when I got to come back and work with him, it was great. And so as a teacher, he was always my go-to guy. Coaching wise, Don Maurer, who was at St. Louis U High, now he's at the Misha offices. I worked camps for him kind of my senior year in high school and beyond, and he really got me into coaching. And when I became a head coach, he was super to me. And through his relationship with Bob Steiner,
right.
Bob, for whatever reason, and I have no idea why those guys liked me, because I was an idiot, but they liked me. They took me under their wing. They helped me so much. Then Terry Cochran, I got to know through those guys as well, and he ended up coming in coaching, and he mentored me sitting 2 inches from me,
right.
You know, like, hey, let it go. Hey, let me handle this. And just those types of things, you know, when he retired just to focus on the AD job, that was a big change for me, because he'd been on my bench for like 13 years.
Right.
So that, it was a major, like I had to kind of.
Like when you look behind you, like, where is he at? Where's
right.
He at? Yeah.
Right. He'd always have the right thing to say. So that was a big change. And then, you know, your uncle and coach Hollander has been great to me over the years. And when I first got started, Bob Steiner recommended coming out to talk to him, and we spent 4 hours and he just gave me everything that St. Charles West does, and we've maintained a great relationship over the
years.
That's
awesome. That's awesome.
He's the best.
That's awesome. So what, interesting for you, how are you different as a coach now than, let's say, you were the second year you started?
Mm. So I think the second year I started, sometimes I felt like I was still playing in the games. Like I was so into it and so intense. And, you know, Vianney historically had not been a great program. And so I felt like I was fighting for every
ounce
of respect and credit, and everything was a fight, I felt like. And, you know, I was over the top with the kids, because if you don't know what to do, you yell and you make them run. And like, we do very little like actual just running conditioning anymore.
Right.
You know, it's all on the court with a ball. And
right.
So I think I've evolved there. I think I handle wins better, and I think I handle losses better. And, and part of that, I think, is having a family, you know?
Yeah, I think that's
a big change.
That was, I think, the best thing for my coaching career was were my kids.
Right.
You know, because let's face it, when you're a coach, those are your kids, but you have, your focus is so hard. It's your only focus.
Right.
And I was the same way. You know, my first 3 or 4 years, especially at the lower levels, because I was coaching freshman and JV, working my way up. I was 23 years old, 24 years old. I was a yeller. I was a screamer. I, you know, everything was about winning and loot. You know, it got over the top, you know? And like you said, I think when you have your own family, you know, you can come home and not only do they keep you busy, but at the same time, I think it puts things into perspective a little bit.
Well, win or lose, you know, my thing has always been, when the game's over, after we shake hands, I go over and give my wife a hug and a kiss. And, you know, my son or daughter, they're jumping on me whether we win or lose.
Right. And that's refreshing.
Everything, right? Yeah, and then you go into the locker room and you talk to the kids. Right. And, you know, I've also learned that, you know, don't say too much after a game. Go home and watch the film, because you might think, we were terrible. And then really you just missed shots.
Right.
And you weren't terrible. You played really well.
And you got to let the games go.
Right.
You know, that's one thing that I think my wife, she always says, you know, you do a really good job of this. Because I think we know other coaches and it can linger. And,
right.
But you have to, you know, and you don't want to think about it any longer than you have to.
Right.
So interesting. That's awesome. So, Lou, what else you got over there?
We're gonna talk about the best.
Do you play an online poker over there on your computer?
Okay. So we're gonna talk about best wins and losses. Do you want to start with the good or with the bad?
Let's go bad first.
All right. What's the
worst? It's actually funny. Ever? It's the best win and best losses against the same team.
All right.
So
who's the worst loss against?
Well, let me ask you. What do you mean by like most devastating?
I think we're talking most devastating.
Okay.
Like, oh my gosh, that was a heartbreaker.
So
not the game you lost by like 50.
No, right. Because I've had plenty of those too. Did I mention the guys we play against?
Yeah.
So in 2012, I had the opportunity to coach a group of kids that were just so awesome. 13 kids from 12 different grade schools.
Wow.
Who came together and had just. We had a great point guard, a great shooter, a great wing, a good post player, a good athlete. We were 27-1 and ranked number 2 in the state and number 2 in the area behind McClure North. And we ended up drawing them in the state quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
We played at Umsl. The place was full. And it's just one of those things that, like, I think back and my pregame, I was real fiery. And I look back now, I'm like, I should have just relaxed. We've never been to a Final Four at that point at Vianney. And they jump on us like 12-2. And we're playing catch up the whole game. And we end up losing by 6 or 8. So we close the year 27-2. McClure North goes on to win the state championship.
So they won that year.
They did.
Okay.
And we gave them the best game they had, you know, throughout the playoffs. I have never, ever been in a locker room so devastated. So devastated.
I can, especially because of the kids.
Right.
Because how good, I mean, that bond is just.
Oh, and it was such, and they wanted to be the first to take us there. And, you know, we were like nationally ranked in USA Today, which was ridiculous, you know, but we started like 17-0.
Right.
I mean, we were rolling and. I'll never forget, we got back and, you know, back then you still had to like fax your stats in to the post.
Yep.
And so I go up to the office and fax them in. And I went through the gym to make sure everything was locked down and closed. And Tony Cochran, who was our best player, our all-time leading scorer, his best friend was our 12th man.
Uh-huh.
And they are just arms around each other in the center circle of our gym crying.
Oh, man.
And I was just like, you guys, you got to get out. I can't even, I cannot do it. It was, that was devastating. And honestly, for me, I kind of thought, well, that, you know, that was our chance.
Yeah.
And Vianney doesn't have teams every year that wins 25 games or 20 games. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm just destined to be like a Norm Stewart guy that coaches forever and never gets to a Final Four, which leads to our best win ever, which is a year later. We have two guys back from that team. We had like 9 seniors the year before. Two guys back in 2013. We play really well. Some young guys step up. We win our district. We beat Troy in the quarterfinals, or in the sectionals, and then we get McClure North again in the quarterfinals at Lindenwood, same place.
So this is back-to-back years.
Back-to-back years.
Oh my
now,
gosh.
McClure North had also lost a
some
ton
guys.
Of guys.
Right.
And then we end up knocking them off and getting a chance to go to our first Final Four in 2013. That was Brad Woodson was a senior. Sean O'Brien was a senior.
Mm-hmm.
Tanner Cochran was a junior guard. And they were kind of our big three. And, you know, to get there after having such a team and thinking we'll never get a chance to get back or get there, for those guys to do it, it was awesome.
That's awesome.
It was awesome.
That is awesome. Well, that's awesome. I mean, I'm just still picturing those kids at center court. You know, that's what it's about.
Yeah,
you know?
It was.
At the same time, those kids are going to be friends forever. And that's what it is. That's why we do what we do.
Absolutely.
You know, so Lou, any more?
What are your thoughts about multi-sport athletes versus basketball guys?
Great question. I am pro multi-sport athlete in everything. It's funny. I was having a conversation with my wife. My oldest son loves hoops. He plays on a very good baseball team that travels around and is doing the Cooperstown thing.
Who does he play baseball for?
They're an independent team called the St. Louis Dynamite. But they're really good. I mean, they're one of the top teams in their age group. And he also plays club soccer. And, like, already, you know,
that's an intense menu.
Baseball started on Friday night. Voluntary soccer practices are starting on Tuesday. It's basketball season. And I just feel like, and none of their coaches, there's no pressure, but you just start to feel it. Like, how can we do all this? And I think that starts at such a young age. And I look like a guy like Trent Champagne, and I just think that's what high school should be. You're going to have a chance to focus on a sport when you go to college.
Right.
As many times as you can wear St. Charles West across your chest or Vianney across your chest, do it. And I hope that my son wants to play soccer, and I hope he wants to play basketball, and I hope he tries to play baseball. I mean, I want him to do all those things, and all kids should.
And why not? You know, and I constantly, and I've done it more this year than I've ever had before, trying to tell my guys, you play for the name on the jersey, and it's not your name. It's St. Charles West. It does mean a lot because I went there.
An Orchard Farm football.
Right now. I do have an Orchard Farm football camp shirt on right now.
You can serve two masters.
But I can't. I also have Santa pants on.
Looks like Fort Dumont South pants.
They do. I look like
their warm-ups.
Yeah, their warm-up pants. I stole their warm-up pants from Friedel over there. So, but I try to tell my guys that, you know, everything you can do for St. Charles West, that's what it's about. You know, I just get frustrated with the kids who only play one sport, who could make the other kids better on the other teams. Because, for instance, you know, like Trent, if he doesn't play soccer, that team doesn't have that run and finish second in the state this year.
Right.
You know, it's just frustrating, I think, for the school when I always say this. I'd never want to look in our student section and see kids that I know could be doing something on the floor to help our school.
Right.
We are fortunate. We don't have a whole lot of kids that just, you know, we've had a couple here recently.
We don't have a lot of kids in our student section. That's the thing.
Well, and our enrollment's gone down. So a lot of the kids actually, you know, not too many kids are getting cut because, and also when your enrollment goes down, the one bad thing about that is the entitlement starts to kick in.
Right.
Because now we have a situation where we have a lot of kids that there's no one to take their spot. You know, so it's kind of a catch-22 there with, you know, hey, no one's going to take my spot, so do I really have to work that hard in the offseason? But I think the biggest reason why I love kids to play all the sports is the competitive learn how to win.
Right.
Some kids, if they just play one sport, they never really learn how to win, or they don't learn how to lose.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you know, I want kids who have lost games before.
Sure.
I want kids who have won games because the losing, you know, most of the kids that I've coached that take these, you know, they don't handle losing very well is because they haven't lost in the other sports. And it's just like they don't know how to act. So I push all of our kids to play as much as they can.
Honestly, I think the biggest thing on that is in these clubs, there aren't educators that are in there.
Right.
And as educators, we get that there's this whole aspect to being a high school athlete.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter. It can be basketball, and it can be volleyball, and it can be soccer, and it can be any sport, baseball. And the club coaches say, like, hey, you need to be at lessons on Tuesdays and Thursdays every week of the winter.
Right.
You know, you got to be at this showcase tournament, and, well, that's basketball season. Well, if you want to be a college athlete, let me tell you, if you're good enough,
you're going to go.
They're going to find you.
Yeah.
They're going to find you.
And that's what I tell people, parents, that all the time. One of the best things I did was I coached 7 years for the prospects, and I traveled. Mm-hmm. And I had the best 16-year-olds in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And all those kids, I would tell their parents, a lot of them were multi-sport guys, but they're like, well, should we not play basketball or do this because we want to get more training? And I'm thinking, you're going to go wherever it takes you, they're going to find you.
Right.
If you're good enough, you're going to go. So I think that is a huge deal. So it's interesting to see kids, you know, they might be the best athlete in three sports in sixth grade, and then all of a sudden they're sophomores and they're just playing football, they're just playing basketball.
Right.
So interesting, you know, I always like to bring that up to coaches because, especially coaches with kids, you know, because and my kid's the same way, you know, already playing three sports and loves it,
right.
You know, and I don't want to tell him.
And mine's already asked me, like, Dad, when I'm in high school, like, what do you think, like, do you think I'll be able to do more than one?
Right.
Like, yes. You certainly can. You make that happen.
Right. You got any more questions over there, Lou?
Yes, I do. Have you had any interest in college basketball, coaching college basketball?
Mm. Yes. I have, and I've had a couple opportunities that I ended up passing on, primarily now because I'm at a point with my family that college basketball is so the instability of it, you know, maybe you're with a great coach and he gets a new job and you got to move halfway across the country, or you have a terrible year and he gets fired and now you're out of luck. I've got a great job. My family, we live 2 miles from Vianney. My kids live a mile from their school. Like, for me now, it's the stability of it.
Well, and I think you, as high school coaches, you know, there's a lot of high school basketball coaches and coaches in general that would do just fine in the college ranks. Sure. But you get into it, and even in, I mean, as a teacher, and especially in the public school system, for me, it's once you're there 10 or 12 years, I mean, it's hard to just be like, oh, I mean, you have a family you got to provide for, and the instability.
Well, even
just
the travel. I mean, if you look at Lindenwood, right? Oh. They go and play on a Thursday and Saturday, so they leave on Wednesday. You're going Wednesday through Sunday, you know, and plus having to recruit 17, 18-year-olds. And
there's so much more to it. And like Coach Hollander, when he was at, you know, he did that.
Right.
You know, and he would work like 80-hour weeks.
Right.
You know, and the travel was just ridiculous. And then, you know, you eye in on a recruit and you got to be at every single game. And the time is just huge.
Well, and at the Division II, and then all of a sudden a low-level Division I comes in and, oh, I want to go play Division I, even though that Division II team would beat that Division I team.
Yeah, it's like
every time.
There was a guy named Dion Lavender, you know, a couple years ago from, I think he went to Alton Marquette, maybe.
Yeah,
but anyways, that's back when Kramer Soderberg was on the staff at Lindenwood and Terry Bolf.
Yeah.
And they followed him around to every single game. And the story is there that he obviously assigned, I think he went to UAB, and I think he's somewhere else now, but they would go to his games, and they got to a point where they would hope that he would have bad games.
Sure, yeah.
Because they're like, obviously we're there because we want him to see that we're here, but if we keep going and he keeps dropping 35, our chances are slim. So he's like, it's weird. He's like, we go to games hoping he scores 10 points, you know, and just a crazy ordeal, you know, and you put all that time in, all of a sudden he doesn't end up there.
Right.
So I just figured, you know, with your personality and the success you've had, I think you would be a great college coach, but I think that instability and just the, you know, your career is what it is. You got your family. It's tough to do.
And it's the relation, you know, more and more it's relations. And I love being in the classroom. I love to teach. So that's a big part of who I am too. So.
Well, and I think a lot of people don't get that point with coaches. Like for me, sometimes my best days are not the 2 hours of practice. It's the 7 hours I spend with my kids. And I teach fifth grade, but I mean, me teaching 20 fifth graders is a heck of a lot.
Crazy fifth graders.
Well, they're not crazy, but it's a heck of a lot of more important,
sure,
I think,
is.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's you know, we wouldn't, no one, we all teach to coach, but at the same time, teaching is us, you know, we're educators,
right.
You know? So if someone came in right now and said, hey, you can't coach anymore, I'd be like, this stinks, but I'd be okay. I mean, I get to teach 20 kids a day, you know, that's what it's all about. So, any more over there?
Nope.
You don't have any better? What are you doing over there?
Nothing.
You doing your homework? Oh, wait. You guys are still not in school yet. You guys go back Tuesday? Good golly.
We got a game Tuesday as well.
We do.
For all you West people, we play Pacific at 7 o'clock, not 7:30 at St. Charles West.
7 o'clock, a little early tip so Pacific can get back there. So, Coach, look, last couple questions here. First, well, we won't end on this one, so I'll ask you this one first, and then we'll move on to one of my last few questions. But recently, Cartier Gordon at SLU. Obviously,
I got
left.
One more for you. Cartier. He told me to do this, by the way.
So, you coached him for a year. And I know as a coach, you're still coaching. You're obviously you know, not going to give us the whole picture. And you only knew the kid for, what, a year and a half?
Year and a half.
Just tell me your experience with him as a player and as a person and just how he was. And because we've heard a lot of things.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. You know, Cartier obviously came in to Vianney. And people don't believe this, but I had no idea he was coming. Like, he came and visited the school, and I remember telling our admissions guy, like, man, that's a big kid.
Right.
He didn't come in here. Like, those kind of kids aren't coming to Vianney.
So this wasn't something where you were following him around for 2 years?
No. And, you know, I didn't know anything about him, and then all of a sudden our admissions guy came in, he's like, hey, that kid applied. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, we'll take him.
I'm like, okay, let's see how it goes.
Right.
And then I got to know his, you know, his AAU coach, his was his mentor and kind of was helping him along, and you know, I knew that there were going to be some challenges. Just for really any kid coming from a public school going to a private school, there's adjustments from dress code to, as silly as this sounds, to get an A at Vianney, you got to have a 93%.
Okay.
And to get a B, you got to have an 85%. So I'm going to him saying, hey, you got a C in this class. You got to get it up.
Right.
No, I don't. it's an 81. I'm like, well, that's well, a C here. Right. You know, and so there were some adjustments like that. And obviously when he came to our place, he was still pretty raw and not in great shape. But you saw flashes and moments where you knew he was a big-time talent. And, you know, ultimately at our place, we just had a certain set of standards that we weren't going to budge on.
Right.
And it got to a point where it wasn't for him. He didn't want to meet those standards. And it really wasn't all that different than what Travis Ford said. It wasn't like when he decided to leave and we were sitting in my classroom and he said, well, then I'm done if that's what it is. And it wasn't angry. It wasn't,
right.
It wasn't explosive. It was just, if that's your decision, coach, then this is mine.
Right.
And I wish you the best. And that was it. So
yeah, and that's kind of how it sounds like it was at SLU.
Right.
You know, it was, hey, this is how we do things around here. And his talent level of anyone who listens to this show, yes, when kids are that talented, as a coach, you're going to have to give them some leeway because they're kids.
Right.
But at the same way, if you start to totally discipline them differently and you just act like, you know, it's not going to be a good deal for your program.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of where I got to was, you know, I was trying to meet him. Like, I'm coming to you.
Right.
I'm coming towards you. I'm trying to understand and meet you. But then there was a certain point where it was, okay, well, you got to come us some too.
Right.
And that wasn't happening. And, you know, for Cartier's sake, I mean, God has certainly blessed him, excuse me, with great talent.
Right.
And my hope is that he gets the right people around him that will help him utilize that, because he could absolutely change his entire family's
life.
Future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for generations.
And you hope that you just continue to hope that, you know, he's young. But like you said, this is a generation life changer for him, because he can make money playing basketball.
Sure.
So interesting. I'm sure, you know, good money. Yeah. So I'm sure he was an interesting guy to coach
basketball
at that age.
Basketball pays.
Basketball does pay. That's right. So moving on here, I think I got one more for you, and that's just, what are your thoughts on parents and youth sports? And the reason I ask you that is because now you have kids that play it. You obviously have parents of the kids that you coach. What is your just thoughts just on if parents and youth sports in general?
So I will say that I feel very fortunate that my children all play on teams that have pretty good parents, supportive, root for.
And that's huge.
All the kids. It's so great. It's so important. And I'm very aware that that doesn't happen everywhere.
No, it doesn't.
But that being said, I have seen some crazy stuff at youth sporting events. That
does anything stick out? Like, do you have a story, or is it just dumb stuff?
No, just dumb stuff. Just excuse me. Just, you know, and I guess everybody gets into it, and you root for your kid and you want to do well. But, you know, I think that there are times that you play a certain team, you know, like in baseball, it seems like we get to the championship game and we're always playing the New Melli Tigers, who are out from this area, and they're very good, or a Naturals team or a Rawlings Tigers team or whatever. Uh-huh. And, you know, just like, oh, I can't stand that guy.
Right.
Like,
and you don't even know him.
I don't even know him. And in basketball, that happens. And, you know, and sometimes, like, it's just, people get caught up in it. And, you know, if we would just let the kids play and make it fun. The thing that I notice, and you see, and I'm sure you see it sometimes when you're scouting, like, you can watch a high school kid. He'll do something on the floor, and he'll immediately look to his parents. And I just think, man, that is not a guy that I want in our program. That is not good. And I try to tell my son.
We've had a few of those.
We do. Yeah, that's like,
it's not
we
good.
Can't stand it.
Right.
And we actually tell the kids, if you
I
do it again,
too.
You're not playing.
I do, too. I mean, a kid will be walking off into a timeout and looking up and talking to his dad. And I'm like, what are we doing? Like, this is about us here.
Right.
Nobody up there can help you now. This is us.
No.
And so you see that, and I try to tell my own son, like, I know I'm your coach, but quit looking at me.
Right.
Just play the game. Play the game. And so, you know, here's what I think, and this is where it gets dangerous. Youth sports have become such a moneymaker.
Yes.
That parents invest, and, I mean, I feed the monster. I'm in it.
Mm-hmm.
They invest so much money in it, and ultimately, 95% of these kids aren't even going to play beyond high school.
Yep.
But if you take it for what it is, which is my kid, like, if he comes out to camp that Alex runs at St. Charles West, he knows, like, eight kids.
Right.
A kid from South County, you know, or they're at my camp and he knows all these. Oh, yeah, Dad, I play soccer against that guy. I play baseball against that guy. That's where you form these really cool friendships.
Absolutely.
But if you think, oh, man, we're paying $2,500 a month, my kid's got to get a college soccer scholarship. Well, you're off the deep end.
I think the money thing has really angered the parents. Because think about it. Okay, I pay $2,500. My kid's not playing a whole lot. Or when he does play, he's not doing great.
Right.
So now I'm thinking about my pocket and where this money came from.
Right.
And now I'm frustrated.
Right.
You know, and I think the money thing has a lot to do with it. Because you don't see a lot of the, you see a lot of this that we're talking about at those events where the kids pay.
Right.
And as a person who
has
a family.
Oh, I got that on video.
Yeah.
That's the best one I've heard all year.
So I think that's the case. You know, that's not going to help the situation when, you know, your kid may not be having success or the coach is doing something you don't agree with and you keep thinking to yourself, I just paid this organization this much money and now I got this guy telling my kid to do something wrong.
Right.
In your opinion, you know, so I can see where you're saying with that. That would be a situation where as my kid gets older, I could see myself thinking about the cha-ching and my, you know, I just paid and now, and now this is happening. So I didn't really look at it from that point of view, but you're right.
Or, you know, I'm paying this much and my kid's the ninth man on the basketball team or he's the 12th man on the baseball team and that's hard.
And then especially because then that parent's not going to want to really have a great relationship with the other parents because they're upset, their kid's not playing a whole lot. That's where you have the divide. That's why when you said your son plays on like the baseball team is an independent
team.
I bet this is a total guess. I'm going to assume that the baseball team you play on with your son, the parents are awesome.
They are. They're great.
Because it's independent and you guys kind of picked the families. Because you know what I want to do when I go to, when my kid's older, what my scenario is, I want to go watch him play baseball. I want to sit in with the parents. I want to BS with the parents and then I want to go have pizza.
Right.
And I want to have those people be my friends because how much time are we going to be with them? A lot.
Right.
So do you really think I want to spend, let's say it is baseball. So, okay, you got to practice on at least one night or two nights a week and you got your whole weekend with these people.
Oh,
you're spending
all day.
You're spending 20 hours, 15 to 20 hours a week with these people.
And no, there's no doubt.
That's I look forward to that because I hope we do it the right way. Right.
And I got a little basketball group and
isn't Robertson's kid on your team?
Yeah, Ryan Robertson.
Are you guys called the Sonics still?
We're the Sonics, it's a great, we got the old school uniforms going, we got it going. And that's the same way. It's weird. It's like a couple of younger brothers of kids I coached and then my nephew and then a buddy of mine who I used to coach with and now he's become an administrator over at Clayton. And then a couple guys from baseball and then somebody new, Ryan. And it's just, it's a neat group of kids and the parents are great and like, that's all I want.
Yeah.
That's all I want for my son and my daughter and my youngest son who's in kindergarten and we just started him playing in kindergarten basketball. And like, that's the experiences. It's having pizza. It's messing around in between games.
Right.
That's where they make the memories. They don't remember if they went 3 for 4 in the championship game or how many trophies they have. That's meaningless.
And that's why we try to start our West teams, our feeder teams. Someone said, why do you start them so early, like third grade? I said, because we have to start building the family relationships.
Right.
If we just start playing these games and these teams and making them up in 6th, 7th grade, it's too late.
Yeah.
So I think that whole connection there with your teammates and the parents. And the parents out there who are listening, you understand, because I'm sure there's one parent out there going, I'm on one of these teams where the parents don't talk to each other. And actually, they talk bad about each other. And then there's the parent going, whew, thank gosh, you know, we got a group of 10 really good families.
Right. And that makes, you're right, that makes a summer fun. It makes a wintertime fun.
Absolutely.
And everybody's rooting for each other.
Well, Coach, that was awesome.
I appreciate you guys having me.
I mean, it's just something that, you know, obviously we want to continue to do with it being basketball season with obviously coaches and people. But we pick guys that we respect too. You know, we're not doing this to make any money. But at the same time, we want to have guests that we respect. And you're someone that I've always looked up to. So I
appreciate that. And that feeling's mutual for sure.
Awesome.
You do a great job.
So we will see you in about a month down the road here.
On a Thursday night.
On a Thursday night in February, I believe, right? Okay. So all those people out there that listen to the show, thank you. And continue to tell others about it as well. And Coach, he'll probably put it out there for you.
Absolutely.
Retweet it out there. Yeah. We want to get this out to the St. Louis and then start, you know, directing it towards the Wentzville and St. Louis and get it all over the place. So
awesome.
We do this because we love it. And thanks again. And I am Chuck. And you are?
This is Lou.
Woo.